This is Keith Scott Allen of Odeco.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hi, this is John with a quick announcement. This podcast is brought to you by Ants Memory Profiler 5 from the good folks over at Redgate Software. It's got a very cool UI that helps you quickly drill into memory leaks and memory usage in your applications. I ran it for over 30 hours on a program I'm working on, and I didn't find any memory leaks because I don't write those, but I did find places where I could use memory better. So this is a good enough product where I would definitely be recommending it, even if we weren't getting paid to do so. But we are, which is awesome. Okay, on with the show. Hello and welcome to Hurting Code. This episode's being recorded July 1st, 2009. Tonight we have our first repeat guest on Hurting Code. That's Rob Connery. Rob, I don't think you need an introduction normally, except can you tell us what your job is again? Because I kind of forgot.
Well, I think it's important to start it off this way. Ready?
Oh, such failure. I was supposed to have a big old coming out of the beer bottle.
I'm
cracking my first beer. I'm derailing this entire podcast. I'm telling you that right now. So whatever questions you came here with are going to be derailed.
Wait. So. Let me pretend like I'm in control. Rob, what would you like to talk about?
I'm here to destroy this podcast. I'm going to destroy you guys tonight. That's my mission.
It's too late.
Well, you know, see, you guys, I was thinking about this. You guys are just hurting the industry. You're like partisan hat. I mean, wouldn't one of you is like Tucker Carlson. Which one of you is Tucker? I think Dente is Tucker Carlson. You guys are hurting the industry with, wait a minute. I'm having a John Stewart moment. Sorry. My job at Microsoft is, well, it's in transition right now, actually. I am working in the community tools group. And I was in the ASP group. And now I've transitioned to a new role, which is more of a community PM. Kind of means that I'm a junior Scott Hanselman.
So he's the principal PM, or does that make you the vice principal PM?
Pretty much. And, you know, the best thing of all is guess who my boss is? Come on. It's not that hard. Scott. Scott is – I am proud to say that Scott, my bon ami, my good friend, is my boss. Should I be scared of that? I think I should.
Yes. Well, that's great. So yeah. What's new then? What do you do in that kind of job?
No, I don't want to answer that. Want to answer that question. I'm here to talk about one thing and one thing only.
Derailing the podcast. Oh,
Kevin,
yes.
Dente. I want to. You know what? Here's what we're going to do. Kevin, get up. We're going to change chairs. We're going to interview Kevin Dente tonight. Because here I have a question for you. Ready for this, Kevin?
No,
when a beautiful blonde woman comes, sits next to you, next to a pool. She's painted blue and she's yellow eyes. How do you not know that's Rebecca Romijn? It's mysterious. How do you not know that? I don't understand.
She was wearing sunglasses. I couldn't see the eyes.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. I saw your little – you know what? You drove me off Twitter. You did. I gave up on Twitter because of that tweet right there. I said to myself, this is a conversation I should be having with Kevin over a pitcher of beer or three while endlessly ripping him apart. But I can't because it's on Twitter. So I had 140 characters. And I said, this is useless. And because, you know what, we had our little back and forth, and the moment was passed. And I said, this communication medium sucks, because now the moment's passed, our beers talking about Rebecca Romijn and your lack of any sort of male intuition is done with. So, anyway,
That's not true, because Twitter is a permanent record of that conversation. It preserves those tweets for eternity. They're archived, except for after they... delete them 1 month after they're tweeted because they can't figure out their database.
Yeah. Well, it could be. But okay, so back to Kevin. This is the important thing. Kevin, what do you have to say for yourself? Rebecca Romijn, what's up?
What can I say?
Well,
you know, when they're not all glammed up, you know, they're much harder to recognize. She was incognito. You know, what can I...
Isn't that part of the whole thing? That's what she does, right? That's her superpower.
That's right. Remember, Mystique is a shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm. True enough.
Okay.
So what's sub-point two of your attack on Kevin Dente? Is this the Kevin Dente roast?
No.
Look, I thought you had something exciting going on that you'd been working on.
I do. So, yeah, I bet. And Thank you, John, for inviting me on the show. I basically, here's how this went down. I Skyped you the other day. You were busy. I said, put down what you're working on. I'm going to be obnoxious for a second. And you're gonna put me on the show or else I hate you forever. And you're no longer my best friend. That's what I said. No, I didn't.
This is community outreach, huh?
Yeah, that's right. So that the thing about it is I've been working on Subsonic 3.0 for, oh my gosh, a year pretty much. And it's really hard. I mean, you know, coding is hard. But tonight, I'm proud to say, and this is why I really wanted to come on the show, I'm releasing this dang thing, and it's going to go up on Google Code. While I'm sitting here, I'm actually zipping files and sending it up to be released. So I really wanted to do it on your show. You know why? Because I love you guys, man. I love you.
So you might call this like a release party for Subsonic 3. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And I'm expecting you guys to have – does everybody have a beer? Well, let's do a communal cheers. Can we do a cheers? Insert the sound effect in here, John. Ready? Cheers. Everybody take a drink. Sway. No. Cheers to Subsonic 3. Woohoo.
Okay. Insert sound effect here.
Thanks. All right. I'll hand the podcast back to you guys. There you go.
You did a really crappy job of derailing our podcast.
I'm starting to feel bad because everybody's being so quiet. And I keep thinking you're sitting there going, who's this obnoxious guy?
We know you. You've been on before.
I know. I was your
first
guest.
We know you're obnoxious.
I was your first guest.
I guess you were. So what is, for those that haven't heard our earlier podcast with you and don't know what you do, what is Subsonic? Can you describe that briefly, just what it is?
Well, this is the technical part of the podcast, isn't it? I guess we need to gracefully transition into doing something technical. It's a new paradigm. No, it is. It came out of my feeling that I've always had that coding is difficult, of course, we all know, but we spend way too much time on the machinery. And so the major part of that machinery you spend time on is the frickin' database. And I swear, over half my time was spent trying to get my code to talk to the database, you know, efficiently, let's call it. I resorted to code generation, da-da-da-da. So the initial rev of Subsonic was all about flexing Visual Studio's build provider to write your data access code for you. And you literally dropped a file in your app code directory and bam, there is your data access layer. And you didn't have to think about it. And to me, that was always something that was really cool about Rails, is you had, you know, Active Record in there and it would just, you know, just work. And you didn't have to think about it. And so that is kind of what I want Subsonic to be. You know, if I could have a tagline under there, it would be, you know, you just don't have to think about it. And it's got a bunch of stuff in there. It's about four or five different ways to talk to your database, and a bunch of utilities that are right now extension methods. And we have a REST handler that you can query your database using HTTP and on your URL, stuff like that to kind of increase your efficiency through the day.
So what is exciting? You said it was really hard doing Subsonic 3. What was the hardness? What was the most hard?
Well, the hardest thing was I started literally four times trying to build a freaking expression parser, using system.link.expression. Here's the thing, and this is where I know Dente is going to chime in and go, dude, it's easy. But the hard part is, like, you take the code, the keywords that are built into C# 3.0 and above, and you have to, you know, scramble that stuff down into expressions, which is a tree of, like, understanding of the code that you just wrote. And then you got to take that tree, and then you got to turn it into SQL. And along the road there, the abstraction utterly explodes. I was having a good giggle reading Jeff Atwood's post the other day because it's true. Like, you know, it's simple when you say from P in db.product select P. That's easy. But what if you want to do a union or a left outer join or a cross apply join? I mean, there's so many things. And, you know, there's all kinds of trickery with link to SQL and ways to make that happen. But, man, when you start getting to the fringes, woo, it's tough. And I'm not saying anything bad about link. I'm just saying, trying to understand what the developer's doing when they say contains, you know, are they talking about a string or are they saying, you know, integer value in the database contains, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which would be an in query. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, whoa, that's hard stuff. Yeah, let's go shopping. Exactly. So that was the super hard thing. And also, you know, one thing I kept going over in my head was, you know, am I just redoing something that's out there? And like Link to Sequel is awesome. I love Link to Sequel. And I think, you know, one thing I found is over the course of 6 months to a year or so, there really wasn't anything out there for other databases as far as Link goes. I mean, there's a few things trickling out now, but not so much. So that's where Subsonic fits in.
So is this an indication that, you know, there's missing infrastructure here, that creating a Link provider is so hard that, you know, it takes a year of development time? I mean, are there libraries that Microsoft needs to provide to make this easier? Or is it just too, you know, or is it just this complex?
You know, I don't want to put this on Microsoft. I mean, you know, it's a great tool set. The hard part is the interpretation. It's like, you know, learning Mandarin, if you will, where, you know, I remember my wife, she took Mandarin in school. She's a Chinese medicine. And so she took some Mandarin. And I remember she came home and was like, you know, that ma, ma, ma means, you know, mother washes the horse, and ma, ma, ma also means I love you, and all these other things. And it all depends on your inflection. And the only way you know it is if you speak Mandarin and you can, oh, that's, you know, they're inflecting that way, and therefore that means, you know, noodles. And it's sort of the same way with Link, believe it or not, in that, you know, you could write a query using a Link expression. And it could be nested with, you know, some let statements in there, and you could have a couple of other, you know, keywords going on. Reading that statement, I would have no idea what SQL you expect. And then even if I was a really, really good at you know, reading a crystal ball, I probably would miss it anyway, because you and I, you know, or me and other developers, wouldn't understand necessarily each other's intent, if that makes sense. Like, what makes perfect sense to you, I'm sure, does not make perfect sense to me. One thing that we can agree on is, you know, how SQL statements work, sort of. Like, if we're talking about, you know, basic ANSI SQL, we can generally agree when you say select blah, 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 inner join, blah, blah, blah. And so that's where, you know, I've had it easy with Subsonic up to now, because its fluent interface sort of just mirrors SQL. And so I've always been able to communicate with people in that way. But now that we have Link in the mix, I'm a little bit afraid. In fact, I've already had to field a request. Some guy said, well, I'm trying to do a left outer join, and here's how you do it in Link to SQL. And I stared at it. He said, you got to be kidding me. I'd never even seen that before.
Well, so I think what you ended up with was the iQueryable toolkit. Is that right? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So I started writing this stuff myself, and I quickly, after the fourth or fifth time, realized that I can't do it. In fact, John, I think you remember I called you one day almost crying.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Come on, man. You're smart. You got a big head. Help me figure this out.
I think I proposed some kind of intermediate language to, like, basically pre-compile into, like, something that you could parse out of, which would have been messy compared to what you ended up with. But
Link-ish. Well, so, yeah, the guy, the interesting thing is the guy who wrote essentially a lot of the language features of Link and also is the initial developer on Link to SQL has decided to create this thing called the IQ Toolkit, or iQueryable Toolkit, and it's pretty cool. And I just stole it. I mean, I emailed him and said, do you mind? I'm going to take this wholesale. I'm going to, you know, make sure you give attribution and licensing and all that stuff. And he said, hey, go ahead. You know, so I took it, and I made some modifications to it so it works with our core stuff. And I made a few perf tweaks to it. And then, yeah, there you are.
Was that Matt Warren?
Matt Warren. That's right.
Okay. Well, I'll link to him in the show notes, too. He's been involved in a lot of cool stuff from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, God, now I can't think of what it's called. It's one of the pillars of Longhorn. WinFS, was that what it was called? Object Spaces, he was in on that one.
Oh, Object Spaces, yeah.
Yeah, he's been trying to get this off the ground for a while. Yep. And they finally got it in with Link, it sounds like.
Yep. Well, it's funny. So as I was cruising along, you know, building out this Link stuff, I stole actually his tests wholesale. I stole his test and his code, and I got them all to work, which is great. But, you know, as I was doing this, I remember thinking to myself, you know, I've fallen in love with object databases. I really have. I mean, because I'm on a mission. So I'm on a mission in life. I think our job is too hard. I think not. Well, it's too hard because we make it too hard. And we diddle over databases, and I just get lost in, oh, well, you know, you're not using the proper indexing. And you focus on databases so much, and the perf of our databases, that we absolutely miss the abomination that our UI has become. And I remember I had this argument so many times with people on past contracts where, you know, they're using some toolkit from some component vendor, and the download of the UI was 280K, you know, just to get a page to load that had a data grid on it. And it was just, and they're worried about shaving milliseconds off the database. And they said, it takes 2.5 seconds for the page to download just because it's so heavy.
Right.
You know, really, you heard a gzip, you know, and you know, finally we ripped the dang thing out of there and scripted out HTML. And, you know, anyway, not to go off on that tangent. But so, you know, the funny thing, so here's where I was going with the whole thing. I was cruising through there, you know, getting all the link stuff worked out. I worked up an Active Record template, and I'll get into more of that in a second. I was doing all this stuff, and I realized, man, I wish someone somewhere could make something that's like an object database experience where you just don't know, don't care. You know, you make your model and then throw it into a repo, and you don't really care what happens to it. Just persist the dang thing. Persist it as you will. Just give me my object back as I had it before. And I just kind of went bonkers on my vacation. I was on vacation just 2 weeks ago. I went bonkers, and I just sat down here, took a vacation at home. And I created my little baby, the simple repository, which I showed to you today, John.
Yes, and, you did.
And I made a little screencast of it on our new doc site, which I'll show to everybody. But that's kind of the other end of the spectrum where, you know, Subsonic does a lot of stuff for you. And that is kind of the stripped down acoustic version where it's like, get out of my way. You know, here, just save this object and shut up. That kind of thing.
Well, so what's it like to write your own provider for Subsonic? Is this something that you could do on a whim, or is this something that you should, you know, sit down and plan out and take seriously?
With 2.0, it was a little involved. It was a lot involved. With 3.0, as long as the database you're working with, it works with system.data.common and implements the data factory, which most of them do, data factory pattern. Most databases do. In fact, Postgres, MySQL, Oracle, all the ones you're going to see out there, Vista and so on, they all have providers that work with System Data Common. System Data Common is Microsoft's attempt at making kind of ubiquitous data access. It derives and figures out what database it's working with based on the connection string, and you don't have to do anything else. So that's what we use. So what I was able to do is I was able to completely get away from the notion of provider in terms of provider model. So now if you want to work with Oracle, all you got to do is change your connection string from System Data SQL Client, if you're working with SQL, to System Data Oracle Client, for instance, or MySQL.data.mysqlClient, and then boom, that's it. And Subsonic will roll over nicely with it. So there's nothing else you need to do. But if you know, and I was talking to Rick Straw the other day, and he's like, well, what if I wanted to query a text file? And he said, well, you know, we have a simple iData provider interface that has, I think, 25 methods to it, and that's about it.
Or if you wanted to, say, query SQL data services.
Mm-hmm. SQL data services. Somebody, you know, gave me a patch for that. I don't know. I don't know SQL data services well enough.
I don't think anybody does quite yet.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to it's nice to have that abstraction away so that, mm-hmm. you know, you could come up with some kind of logical mapping for SQL data services. And I was thinking along the lines of, you know, not necessarily Bigtable, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, other kind of non-relational DBs like that.
Yeah, well, you stumped me. No, I don't know. I mean, someone, yeah. Who was it that, I'm trying to remember, it was, oh, geez, he's going to get mad at me. I think it might have been Paul, one of our committers, sent me a bunch of patches for SQL data services. And he said, you know, this is great. You know, I said, I have, you know, no doubt that it is, but I don't know what it is yet. And I have to start with what I know here, and I can't just shove stuff in that I don't know what it is. So I owe him getting back into it. So maybe with 3.1, we'll have some support in there for it. But I know he was able to get it to work.
That's very cool then.
Yeah. So
I mean, it means that all you have to do is get Jeff to convert Stack Overflow over to Subsonic instead of Flink to SQL, and then he can scale right to the cloud, right?
Oh, my goodness sake.
Okay, one thing you were talking about was your simple repository earlier. So the idea there is you hook up your connection string, you create a new repository, and then what does it do for you?
So what Subsonic is, or 3.0, is a collection of pieces that interoperate. So we have the notion of a data provider, which is really the skin that lives right above your database. It executes the queries. It uses system data common. So you give it some SQL, it'll execute it. It will hand you back some records. We also have a query parser, an expression parser. So if you have an object and you want to work with iQueryable, you can do it with our core object stuff. And what it will do is it'll take any link expression you hand it and hand you back a SQL expression. So that's chunk number two. Chunk number three is our old standby, the simple query tool, or our Fluent interface query tool. And so these things are the core of Subsonic. Now what's on top of that is a set of T4 templates. And so you have this really cool tool set underneath. And now what you can do is kind of build to suit, if you will. So we have Active Record that will look at your database, spin out an object set with some, you know, data awareness to it, but it uses the core tool. So for instance, we have a single or default method, a factory method on each object. And so you pass in a lambda that will, you know, identify which object you want. So our expression parser will take that lambda, tweak it out into some SQL or, you know, some core bits, and then we're able to execute that query. And so we also have another template set we call, you know, our link templates, which is basically a copy straight up of link to SQL. So if you don't want to work with Active Record, you want something a little bit more linkish, you can use that. And then finally, we have the simple repository, which uses reflection, light reflection, to go in and figure out what you're trying to do and takes its best guess and then executes queries based on your model.
Okay. So one difference I think that I've seen in the code is that, like, the way that you define a model in Link to SQL or Entity Framework or whatever, you end up with and this is changing, I guess, now, but in the past, it's taken a lot of attributes, and you kind of have to work with, you have to override some things, and you have to define, you know, you have to implement some things in order to, so it knows when you're disposing and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going straight POCO objects, right? For
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, aside from our Active Record template, we have an iActive Record interface that we implement. I mean, the concept there is that if you're using Active Record, you really don't care if you're inheriting from anything. But if you're using the simple repository, which I showed you today, yeah, we're just using straight POCOs. And, I mean, we do have some annotations that we throw on there. So with something I haven't even talked about yet, which is migrations, we have auto migrations now. So if you try and save a model object and the database table doesn't exist, it gets created for you and the object gets saved. I'm not answering your question because I don't remember it.
Well, it was dumb. It was about attributes and stuff. So you were talking earlier about simple repository and how it would create tables for you and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work long term? Like, as I continue to work, I mean, now I've got this table and I add a column or I remove a column, mm-hmm, or all that sort of thing. What goes on?
Well, you know, ideally, the whole idea of this simple repository and its auto migrations, if you will, or auto schema building, is it's a developer's tool. So it's not meant to be used during runtime. So when you create the repository, and this was at Kevin's behest, I used to have a Boolean that I would send in to say, yes, turn on migrations, but now I have a nice enumeration.
I noticed that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's for you, my man. Anyway, so when you tell it to turn on the migrations, what it does is it takes that object and then we sort of just take a look at, well, what are these properties? And then we apply a little convention to it. So we squeeze out all the properties of the object that comes in. If the first field we encounter is class name and then ID, well, then we say, oh, this must be the primary key. And so that's what we do. We make it the primary key. If it's just called ID, we make it the primary key. We default all the strings to nvarchar 255 and, you know, a couple other things in there that we do. You can also, if you want, throw attributes onto those properties saying, no, use this as the primary key, please. And, you know, oh, this shouldn't be 255. Set this string length to 500 and so on. Did I answer your question?
Well, you answered part of it, but then now let's say I delete one of those fields. What happens?
When you hit save, it's going to look at the database and say, oh, is there a table in there? And if it's not, it's going to take the object and bang out some create SQL. If there is a table in there, what happens is a synchronization where it's going to say, all right, well, are all the columns present? And if they are present, is the length of this column right? Is it nullable? Does it have a default value? On and on and on. So it just will change and tweak as you go. You'll never drop and recreate the table. It'll drop and alter a column if you tell it to, but it'll just run an alter statement like I showed you today, you know, with the one little, what was it? I think I was doing a blog post object, and I said, oh, let's add in a publish date. And I added a property onto my object, saved it, and then publish date got thrown into the database. And I said, well, we should make that nullable now in the database. So then I made a nullable property, nullable date time, and then it went and altered the column and changed it. And so that is, so it's a synchronization. It is not a wholesale replace.
So is there, this is something that happens when you're saving an object, or is it something that can be done explicitly to say, you know, here's my object model, you know, synchronize my database with it?
Yeah. You can run the migration completely separately. So we still, Scott, I kind of lied to you a little bit. We still have the notion of a provider, but not in the provider model sense. It is still called a provider. But what it is I keep saying, is a glorified wrapper around a connection string. Once you create a provider, you can say, migrate this object, and it does it. And so it'll just create it for you. Or you can do it automatically through the simple repository. But yes, you can make this part of a test suite if you want. And that's one of the problems I had when I was first coming up with migrations, because I felt like, you know, Rails flexes a lot of Ruby's goodness to make migrations happen fairly gracefully. And I always thought there's a little bit, we can make this a little bit more automatic and intuitive for .NET developers if we just kind of make it go off, if you will. Then I thought, what's that go-off mechanism going to be? You know, is it just when you run the app? Well, you don't want to be always running migrations when you run the app. But I don't know. It could be in a unit test. It could be the workflow on it. Could be however you want it to be.
So I think you answered some of this already, because you were saying this is more of a developer tool. I was thinking, like, you know, what's the, okay, how does this work when I'm developing in stage and there's a production environment and all that kind of thing? It's the idea that I would work with this until I had something in place, and then I would switch my model over to Active Record or something else, or would I continue working with simple repository?
That's a good question. You know, in terms of workflow like that, you know, I always straddle that line with Subsonic. I'll give you an example. We had a situation where a lot of these enterprise guys said, I want to be able to switch databases on the fly. It's something I really need to do, and I only want to have one object model. So I want that object model to be able to switch which database it talks to on the fly. And so what they did is someone committed a, what they called a connection provider. And essentially what it was is a glorified list of connection strings. And, you know, you could specify which connection string you want to use and so on. So I took a long look at that one day and I thought, you know, that is an application concern. You know, having Subsonic store the connection strings, it's crawling a little too much into the user's architecture. So I booted it out and the guy got mad at me. But I said, you know, if you want to store connection strings and pass those into Subsonic, go for it, you know, because your storage of connection strings is going to be different than another person's. So back to your question, John, in terms of how this would work, every site or every shop is going to have a different way they push data or they push a site. Gosh, man, it could be through build servers. It could be through anything, really. It could be Visual Studio Publish. Who knows? Point being is I just want to have the mechanisms there for people to be able to have it happen, like literally a bat file you could just run. And it will transport the data over, let's say, or a console app that could be an integration app, maybe a series of integration tests that actually just run and pull data. And in fact, our unit test for Subsonic, we have a whole drop create database thing that adds in a bunch of test data. So every time we run any of our queries, the first thing that happens is a simple repository drops and recreates the database for us. And then it populates it with dummy data. So I don't really want to go in and start prescribing workflow to people, because that's where it gets really tough.
Well, so with the switching databases on the fly, mm-hmm. were they thinking maybe of like an instance where they needed to shard off the database, or were they just, was it just some crazy thing where they just wanted to point out a totally different set of data?
Yeah, so this guy, he had an application, and a lot of people, I mean, I was surprised when I saw how many folks wanted to come in and switch their connection strings on the fly. And so it came down to more or less a hosted application scenario where people, rather than having, let's say, segregated data, they had segregated systems. And so they wanted to be able to pass in a connection string per user, but use the same one object core, which makes sense. And so that was the scenario that a lot of folks are working against. So we've made that available now, and tried to make it really, really simple to do.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. I saw that a lot when I worked at Fred Hutchinson, where you would have a single app with a single schema, and then you would just have multiple installs, and then you'd have like one big reporting kind of thing,
exactly.
Where you'd want to point at different instances. And that's, you know, personal opinion, a horrible way to to design a data warehouse. But
yeah, hey. Well, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, you know.
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting because one of the things that fascinated me initially about Inhibernate was that it has support for sharding built in. And so, yeah.
And all that, and all those 800,000 lines of code.
They found time to throw in a lambda that says, you know.
I know. The whole subsonic acquisition of Inhibernate got derailed just because of that issue right there. Anyway.
Well, that is kind of a good question. Like, there's a lot of different things out there for data access. Like, I mean, right off the top of my head, there's Link to SQL, Entity Framework, and Hibernate. There's several other, you know, code generation type of things. Where do you think the sweet spot of subsonic is in that whole, you know, environment or whatever?
You know, it's interesting. So I have a new wiki that I just put up, and I was trying to figure out, okay, what do I put in here? I mean, wikis are massive. And one of the first things I wrote was a comparison. Which tool do I use? What am I going to do? So I tried to address that question, and I always say the same thing every single time, and that is, no one ever got fired for using Microsoft. That's pretty much what it comes down to. So if you're not sure, and you're in a position where you're in a high intensity application, your boss is a little iffy on the whole open source thing, who knows? You know, if you use Link to SQL or EF, chances are you're safe. Let's just put it that way. And Hibernate has a learning curve to it, and a lot of concepts that you have to I don't know how to put this properly without saying buy into, but you have to buy into it. You have to sort of embrace it, go with it, and kind of have to do it in Hibernate's way. And they got a lot of backdoors in Hibernate. And I'm not a big Hibernate user, so I'm not going to talk about it too much. But it's definitely sort of a world into itself. Whereas, you know, with Subsonic, what I'm really going for here, really, really after, is sort of the Burger King of ORMs, if you will. You know, have it your way. And the reason why I think that's important is, as I keep saying, we think about this stuff too much. So, you know, a lot of people just want to use Link. They want to use POCOs, or they just want to work with some objects that just save themselves whatever. If you don't like the way we did it, we give you a whole mess of T4 templates that you can just change. I like to say, you know, we got your back, and that's pretty much the way it is. If you don't like the way we do it, fine. You know, go for it. You know, you have a good time. So that's the way this all sort of shakes out. I mean, with each tool set, they have the way you're supposed to drive the tool set, you know, given this circumstance, and you have to read the manual and so on. Kind of just want to get away from that. I kind of want to say, oh, you want to write inline SQL? I have an object for that. In fact, it's called a coding horror, where you can write an inline SQL statement. And on one line, bam, and you're done. So does that sort of answer your question? It's a little loosey-goosey in there, but it's the best answer I can give.
It does, and actually, that does. So I asked if we had any questions, and one of the questions I got was from Jeff, and his question for you was, "Why is SQL so awesome?" So
Jeff says it is.
So I think it's funny because Jeff is using Link to SQL on, you know, he's not writing raw SQL when he's doing Stack Overflow. But sure. I think, you know, the question there is, you know, well, why, what's so much better about using, you know, an object relational mapper over raw SQL? I don't know if we have to even dignify that with an answer.
Well, it's tough, and I see what he means. So this is funny. We'll go on a tangent for a second, but, you know, like, everybody's got their opinions on data access, of course. And, you know, but if you sit down and you say, all right, you know, I am Jeff Atwood, and my partner is Joel Spolsky, and we're going to write this Q&A site that is really the bomb. I got to tell you, you know, if I was the lead developer on that thing, I would probably kick every single ORM out the window. Because the thing about it is, and I faced this internally just a little while ago, with a group that I was on, and we were building out an application, and we were trying to figure out our data access strategy. And I, you know, they said, well, what should we use? You know, should we use EF and Link to SQL or whatever? And And I said, you know, any framework that you choose will always become a liability. And not a liability in a bad way, just a liability, something you will need to support going forward. And should you ever choose to remove it for something in the future, oh boy. You know, and no one, you know, it's so funny when you think about like Jeff's concerns, you know, obviously speed and scalability, maintainability is in there somewhere. But when you have a big, big app like that, I can totally see where those guys are coming from with like, yeah, Solid's great and neat, but dude, it doesn't matter when you have this stuff. And I'm not agreeing with that or disagreeing, but I can totally understand it because like all of a sudden, you know, when you're talking about database horsepower, like I just saw a tweet of Jeff's just a little while ago about 48 gigs of RAM. My goodness. These servers these days are so powerful to need that much RAM. My goodness. You know, I guess I can kind of see why he's feeling his angst. Let's put it that way.
Just going back to the simple repository thing for a sec. It looks like, you know, with the POCO stuff, you're sort of kind of pushing into, you know, in Hibernate's sort of space a little bit. You know, whereas something like Link to SQL and previously Subsonic has been sort of database first.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of the first sort of foray into object first kind of development. And, you know, in Hibernate takes that to sort of to the nth degree where you have tons of mapping strategies and, and you know, you can really kind of do your database how you want it and your objects how you want it and then configure how they come together. And I'm curious is that something that you're looking toward as a goal, or do you really like the POCO stuff as just like it's entirely convention based? There's no, you know, configurable mapping. There's no strategies for, you know, inheritance mapping. Is it just like, you know, you give me your object, I will define how it gets stored in the database?
Yeah, more of the latter. It was all about trying to approximate an object database feel. You know, a tool that I really like is DB4O. And I like it because it's the only object database I've ever used. But those things are ridiculously fast. And, you know, also, you just don't worry about them. You know, you don't worry about how you're going to fill stuff or how am I going to do, you know, this. It just is. It just works. I wanted that experience because I'm all about experience first versus theory. So I will readily throw theory right out the window if I can approximate an experience for a user or a developer. And in this case, my users and developers are the same thing for me. So to give you a concrete example, I was just tootling around with a prototype the other day, and I had to use SQLite. I'd never used it before. So I spent about, not very long, an hour and a half, just reading docs and also figuring out, well, how can I verify the data that's in there? I want to see it with my own eyes. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be nice if I could just tell Subsonic, just put the data in here and just be done with it. Create my tables for me. That is where the simple repository came from. Right there, that one thing, that one little statement. And now I can do that. And you know, I don't, when you're talking about SQLite, I really don't care how it's structured. I mean, SQLite doesn't care how it's structured. And, you know, there it is.
We were talking a little bit about performance earlier, and there's different reasons why you'd use an object relational mapper, and one obvious one a lot of people gravitate towards is that it's quick, right? You know, like you don't have to write all that yucky SQL, and you can just get in and start writing some code. But I think, you know, more experienced developers realize that there's trade-offs to that, and that's not really necessarily going to, you know, there's liabilities to that as well. But I think some things that I expect out of an object relational mapper is that there is some investment put in to optimization and performance, that instead of me having to hand tune every single select clause, that, you know, that somebody else is doing that and that I'm benefiting from what other people do. And I know when I talk to Ayende at the MVP summit, and he talked about that, how, you know, that they tune specific things. So I know that you've done some of that with Subsonic. I mean, is there some kind of expectation that in general what Subsonic does is possibly going to be better than what I would write myself if I wrote the SQL?
No. You know, you know, when you write SQL statements by hand, you're really close to the middle. And you basically, you know, write a statement. There's nothing needs to be parsed or interpreted. There's no reflection on anything necessarily. You know, you just wham bam. But the perf difference we're talking about is so ridiculously small. I have a whole perf app that I run here, and basically to check if I'm eating up RAM or not. And I was, you know, I thought, well, let's have a benchmark of a straight SQL statement. And I ran 1,000 selects, filling up a basic object with like 10 properties. And I just did 1,000 selects in a loop. I did one with Active Record, I did one with Simple Repository, and I did one with straight SQL just as a benchmark. And I mean, ADO is so good at caching connections and doing all the things that it does that it really, it almost doesn't matter. It's like bare milliseconds of difference. Where the perf problems come in is almost always indexing in the database, or you know, or you have errors that are firing and that you're swallowing and catching them, for instance. Other good ones are, you know, readers leave connections open. I ran into one with a MySQL data provider where I was looping over MySQL and boom, I used up all the connections in the connection pool. It's because the provider's got a bug in it. You know, there's all kinds of weird things that can get you. But usually the performance between parsing out a query and jamming something to and from a database is so negligible. But, you know, if we lived in a world universe of milliseconds and microseconds and whatnot, you know, you're never going to be faster than straight up SQL.
Well, I guess I was lobbing you a fastball and you like threw it in my face. But, you know,
whoops, didn't mean to. Well,
I actually, lobbing a fastball isn't even, I'm mixing some metaphors up pretty badly. No, but what I was thinking is, you know, if I'm given time, if I'm given a day to write each query, I'll write a pretty good query. But what I find is that when I'm developing, I don't actually have that kind of time to handcraft each query.
Sure.
And that's something also that I think that Damien Gard talked about when we were talking about Link to SQL, is that in general, you know, if it's going to get like the 90% or whatever. And, you know, I do find that a lot of time it's negligible or even slightly better, you know. And then right. And then you can focus on those few cases where you're like, what the hell were they thinking, you know, and rewrite the query sure. yourself.
Yeah.
So
were you asking me a question or?
No.
Did I miss it? Oh, you just, okay.
So you talked, what have we talked about with Subsonic 3? We talked about the link stuff. We talked about Simple Repository. Are those the two main things, or is there some other goodies?
Pretty much. A lot of people are going to say, why Subsonic? And, you know, why should I care? That's kind of a big question that I've learned to try and answer, you know, especially with my job at Microsoft. People want to know why technology X. And what does it mean to them? And it's not an easy question to answer because I'm not selling a product. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to get someone to use it. I don't get anything. People use Subsonic. All I'm trying to do is help out. Because, you know, everybody that makes an open source app, they have a vision that, you know, they're trying to kind of do what they think is right in the world. And for me, I've always said, you know, Subsonic's goal in the world is that we do too much. We think too much. We engineer too much. If I told you right now, John, I need an app, and I maybe described all the specs for Stack Overflow, Lord knows what you're going to think about. The idea is that, you know, you should be able to just stop thinking. That is kind of where I'm trying to go with Subsonic, to sort of give you the stuff you need, not tell you how to do your job. And should you need to change the way I've done things, you certainly can. And I just want to speed people's day up so they can get home and spend time with their family. And that's really what it comes down to.
There were some questions on, like, you know, how does Subsonic work with your Microsoft job? Because some people thought you were going to Microsoft to work on Subsonic. Other people mm-hmm. thought that you were going to Microsoft and Subsonic was going away. Obviously, kind of mm-hmm. it's not really either of those. It's somewhere in between. No.
So when I got hired, I actually got to sit with Scott Gu. And I just said, look, I really want to be super clear on this. Are you really hiring me? And do I really get to spend X percent of my time building out Subsonic? And he just smiles, well, yeah. You know, like, what? Okay. And so that's really been the deal. Within Microsoft, you have to set commitments that you're going to do throughout the quarter or throughout the half year or whatever. And so, you know, here's 4 achievements that I'm going to go for. And this is how much percentage of my time is, you know, going to be devoted toward it. And so every single time I've been able to go in and say X percentage is going to go towards Subsonic, however much percentage I thought it needed. And they've just said, great. So that's essentially time they're paying me, and I get to work on Subsonic. Now, they're not paying me to work on Subsonic. I want to be pretty clear on that. But it's still my own thing. I have an agreement with, you know, in my employment agreement, it says right there, Subsonic is my deal, my call, everything about it is mine. And they're happy with it. So I continue working on it. And it's weird. A lot of people ask me, is it dead? I haven't seen a check-in. I haven't seen blah, blah, blah. It must be dead. No, it's not dead. You know, it's just me taking my time. And that's one thing, if I can throw this in there, I have learned excruciatingly over the last year is to take my time and get it right. Because if I turn something out that isn't inspiring, to me at least, that's the point. I'd rather wait. You know, people have accused me of, oh, it's a dead project for I don't know how long. Probably ever since the whole thing started. You know, the week after I pushed out 1.0, oh, it's dead. I'm just kidding. But it, you know, I'll take that, you know, because, and it's just funny, I'll echo a sentiment that DHH said that I pinned him on once in a blog post of mine. But, you know, I built it for me. And while I know that I have responsibilities to the community to support it, and I do, I'm not going to respond the way maybe a typical business would with, you know, oh, I'm getting criticized. Oh, no. You know, everyone's going to criticize me. Not everyone. Always someone will. So that's okay. You know, but I'm still going to do this right.
And we had one more listener question from Chip Cray. And his question was, how has your view of DDD changed since you started on the storefront?
Well, I didn't know it at all when I first started. And I remember when I tried to take it on and I called a few guys and said, hey, what do you think? And blah, blah, blah. And they said, you're not going to need it. It's too complex. I said, okay. You know, all right. I still want to learn it. And then they'd say, well, I'm not an expert. All right. So I went and bought a book and learned the jargon, talked to more guys and said, well, you know, everyone said the same thing. It's, you know, it's what you're working on is not complex enough. I said, all right, fine. And so as I started working on it, you know, and learning the ins and outs and nuances of it, I really like it. I mean, really all it is hyper customer focus. And I don't want to just lay it down to one sentence, but that's really what it is. It's hyper customer focus. It's building out your code very specific to customer needs. And I'm all about that. I think it's great. And you stay focused on the end game, which is, you know, what you're getting paid for building. And so, but then at the end of it all, when I kind of built out my DDD stuff and I sat there and looked at how complicated it was for what it was doing, I said to myself, I don't need it. Everybody's right. So there it is. I think when you're getting to like someone says to you, hey, let's build a fiduciary compliance application where, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, maybe DDD might work there. We have a lot of concepts to.
So, Rob, do you have anything you'd like to plug? Anything, any books you may have written recently? Anything you'd like to?
No, I'm not much of a plugger.
Okay. Are you talking anywhere soon?
You know what? I was talking to Jeff Atwood about maybe doing one of his Stack Overflow days or whatever they call it. And I think I might do one of the London dates. But short of that, I have no idea what I'm doing next, what conference I'm going to.
Okay.
So, yeah. Not much there, huh?
All right.
You should come out to the Bay Area one, man.
You know what? I have friends there, and when I do, I promise you, I will call you, because it'll be fun.
So I'm going to wrap up here, then.
All right.
Yes? Okay. All right.
Promise me you're going to put that song in, right?
I'll put that song in.
All right.
Okay. Thank you for listening attentively this week to Herding Code. Now is the time on Sprockets when we dance. Catch us next week. Thank you. Goodbye.
Touch my monkey.